It's Friday, baby. That can only mean one thing. It's the crack. That's right, crackheads. We are back. And it is a weekend jam-packed with combat sports action. Like, I mean, it's right there. It's all over the place. Could you believe that Tyson Fury has already fought? He's already won in the 7th round. To be seen in the future on his Netflix series. The 3rd season of. Elaine's a big fan, I will say. But not ideal for the old combat sports fan. There's going to be a lot of boxing talk today. We are going to be talking about some comments Canelo Alvarez made to the great Ariel Helwani on his interview midweek. But we also have an old fight there in Abu Dhabi. Big Unk. He's back, baby. And Chuck Mendenhall got to speak to him. My God, uncovering so many truths and ridding himself of the subterfuge of what we usually see from Ankalaev. He is laid bare. We're going to talk to Chuck Mendenhall about that later. He's, of course, taking on Bogdan Guskov because, well, that main event fell out, unfortunately. Didn't go according to plan. Good old Khalil Roundtree was out. There was a lot of jostling for position. In the end, we have got Mr. Bogdan Guskov. But that's not all. If you thought the MMA gods were laughing this weekend, you are correct. Because Thad Jean is no longer taking on Shamil Musayev. He is taking on, Ernesto Rodriguez. Yeah, I it's not quite the fight we wanted. Tyson Pedro also on that card, but another fallout for PFL. And that was a really, really tasty fight for Thad Jean. I thought it was a really big test against Shamil. I'm a massive fan of Musayev. Always have been back from his KSW days. But yeah, we're going to have to see how that goes. We'll be talking about all of this stuff. Oh, we'll probably get to AJ. The aforementioned Tyson Fury, their proposed fight that is supposed to be happening. Tyson Fury may have made some comments distancing himself from the possibility of that happening. Zuffa Boxing is happening on Sunday at the theatre at Madison Square Garden. And Errol Spence is back in action against Zoo in Australia. So lots of boxing happening this weekend. But before I bring in my beautiful colleagues, we have a word from our lovely friends over at Kalshi. This episode is sponsored by Kalshi, the largest prediction market in the United States. Here's what makes Kalshi different. You are not playing against the house. Kalshi is peer-to-peer trading. You buy yes or no contracts on whether something will happen, and you're trading directly against other users. Think of it like buying or selling a stock. The line isn't set by some algorithm working against you. Public opinion sets the price. Kalshi is CFTC approved, federally regulated, which is why it's available all across the country, including California and Texas. Download the Kalshi app and use code CRAIC, that's C-R-A-I-C, to get up to $500 when you trade $25. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi, trade what's next. Now that we've heard from our wonderful friends over at Kalshi, let me bring in the lads. Ben Folks, Chuck Mendenhall, how are you, darlings? Ben is wearing some skimpy outfit today, you know, showing off those big shoulders, those big muscles.
Showing a little too much arm, a little too much neck.
Can't even contain it.
Put an overshirt on, for Christ's sake. I mean, there's other men here, okay? Stop intimidating us with your physique, Ben.
Pizzy, it's 95 freaking degrees outside. You're lucky I'm wearing a shirt at all at this
point. Are we lucky?
That's probably 38 Celsius, by the way. I'm just doing some basic math here.
If it was this hot in Ireland, you'd have fans pointing at you from every possible direction. There's no way you'd be wearing pants. We all know that. We've heard what goes on over there behind the scenes. So give me a break. Did you claim that this Tyson Fury fight is already over? I just found out about it and it's over.
You got to say spoiler alert if you're going to give us the outcome. I thought you were just going to mention that it was happening. You know?
Darshan. Darshan's telling us Marius Wack will not come out. I think his name is Wack or Wack.
Wack, I think.
Will not come off his stool to answer the bell for round 8. Tyson Fury stops Wack in Thailand to set up a mega fight with Anthony Joshua later this year. That's from our boy Darshan over there. So, Ben, are you looking forward to seeing this fight in 3 months' time on Netflix?
This fight, and the weird thing when I first heard somebody say, Tyson Fury is in a fight this weekend, you can't watch it. And I went, what year is it? Am I sitting around the Telegram waiting for updates? Like, what the hell are you talking about? You can't watch this whole thing. Is fighting for people to see him. And then that's how I found out that there's a reality show called At Home with the Furies.
Mm.
And I got to ask this. Did we put zero thought into naming that show? Because Tyson Fury There's a name right there that lends itself to all manner of puns. We can sit here all day coming up with pun titles for this show. At Home with the Furies sounds like we were running out the door and we were like, oh, crap. I was supposed to send them the name for that show. Shit, I got a flight to At Home with the Furies. Okay, go. And just, it sounds like the laziest thing ever. I mean, and I come to find out that big fans over there in the Pete C. Carroll household.
Huge. I mean, Elaine, when At Home with the Furies comes out, she will put on, and then it's just 10 episodes.
Is this for Tommy? Mostly for Tommy, right? Like, this is...
She'd be a big fan of Tommy. There's no denying that. You know what I mean? He doesn't get a lot of... He does appear, I believe, but...
As far as boxing goes, like, he's a pretty good-looking guy, right?
Top five. I mean,
definitely top five. What's going on over there at the Fury household when you're watching the show? Is it them just, like, cooking breakfast? Okay.
Running in Markham. Does a lot of running along the coast of Markham, and people...
I assume he's never wearing a shirt, right? Like, just...
Well... No, he doesn't wear a lot of clothes. No, he doesn't. And, you know, sometimes, like, you know, it's great because Morecambe is, like, kind of an older population, I believe. So it's a lot of pensioners kind of out there on the boardwalk, and Tyson will be running past him. Like, they'll stop him in the middle of his run. They'll be like, you're that boxer man, aren't you? And he's like, yes. And he stops and he has to talk to them, like, shows him in the supermarket, this giant 7-foot man walking through doing his shopping. He also he visits the dump a lot. A lot. Like one of his favorite things to do is load up a van full of scrap and just go to the dump. He says he goes two or three times a week, would you believe? Which will speak to the appetite for maybe frivolous spending in the Fury household, perhaps.
It sounds like we need to watch the show, Ben. I mean, it's a pretty compelling case here.
I mean, that's honestly the most normal thing I think I've ever heard about Tyson Fury is that like a man of a certain age who enjoys a trip to the dump, like. I can't.
Saturday mornings around here.
Yeah, where you're just like, your dad would be like, get in the car, we're going to the dump. And you're just like, you know, it's Saturday for me too.
Yeah.
You know? Next thing you know, you're at the dump all day.
My dad loves the dump as well. My dad just fucking can't move for a dump. Well, I'm not talking about taking that shit here. I'm talking about, you know.
You didn't need to
drop it off. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The context, I think, got us
They call
there.
It a tip here. They say, do you want to go to the tip? They'd call a dump a tip.
It's really?
News. Yeah.
You guys just can't ever be normal about anything.
Huh? Tyson Fury calls it a tip. I'm heading to the tip. Like, he would say that.
To the tip.
Yeah.
There's just tip. You'd ever get me to guess that's what you were. If you were like, hey, do you want to run with me to the tip? And I'd be like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's another euphemism, isn't it? Yeah. Fuck.
Okay. I don't mean to like it, but like, who are your top five Ernesto Rodriguez fights? Like, if you were to have to break it down, like, if you really were. Could you?
That was a bad one for PFL, dude. When I heard that news, I was like, oh, God.
What's up, Ben? You don't have, not, there's a lot. I get it. It takes a minute to.
Who could possibly choose?
You know? Oh, man. And that's our weekend right there.
Listen, lads. We have
there's a lot going on, and yet somehow nothing going on.
Yeah.
It's that's Or
it's already went
that,
on
like,
in some cases.
You know, I sweat over the notes. You know this, guys. I get very worried about the notes. I get worried about thumbnails. You know, this
It's like the hilarious banter's up front this time.
Yeah. This is it. I was like, well, what are we going to talk about? There is lots of fights, but nobody's really jumping up and down about any of them. Any of them. And as I said, there is all over the world, there are these fights happening, and I'm just not feeling the... Am I blinded to the buzz? Is there something wrong with me? Or is there in fact no buzz for all 87 cards that are happening this weekend?
I think what's happening here is that they're overshadowed because people are still talking about the biggest matchup, Odysseus versus the Suitors.
Oh, yeah.
Out there in Ithaca, just going down. Arrows are flying. Robert Pattinson is cowering in a corner, be like, get him. And I'm telling you guys, once you've seen that battle, it's hard to get excited about Big Onk and Bogdan Ruskov.
Petey, you know? By the way, I hit that. I had under 9.5 minutes before he brought this up, and here we are.
The Odyssey. Ben, you know,
what a film, you guys. What a towering achievement by Sir Christopher Nolan.
Look at this guy.
Wow.
He's good at films, isn't he, Christopher Nolan? Good.
He's been known to make a decent film here and there.
Yeah. But now, Ben, does it feel like 3 hours? Like this is a 3 hour film, right?
Okay. I mean, my kids are 13 and 11, especially the youngest one, huge Greek myth lover, has read the Odyssey and the Iliad in these like really good graphic novel forms. It's made to be looked at, but also, and she read it several times and could tell you all about the Iliad and the Odyssey. And so when the trailers first dropped for this thing, excitement around this house was high. We went Friday afternoon when it came out, and I was a little worried. I was just like, because I took them also to see that newest Steven Spielberg movie, and that one was around like 2.5 or so, and you could feel people getting restless in the seats next to me.
Disclosure? Is that one?
Yeah, Disclosure Day. Yes.
Was it good?
That one. It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. You don't need to see that. Well, you could wait till that one's available on streaming is what I'll say to you. But we went to see it. I was like, there's popcorn, and we got the like slushies that they sell at the movie theater now. Like, that's going to buy us some time, but they're getting a little bit antsy toward the end. This one, 3 hours, and I looked over, and they were literally on the edge of their seats. Just leaning forward, and I'm just like, you know what's going to happen. You know this story inside and out, and yet still absolutely riveted throughout the entire thing. Two thumbs up over here. I highly
love it, man.
Our boy Jordan's going today after the crack. He is going.
He's legit going.
He is very, very excited. Can I say, my friend Steve, who listens to the show, he went and he said, Troy is better than this. How do you feel about that?
Get out of here. Send me location. I'm going to go and I'm going to fight your friend over
He
this.
Fills out those t-shirts too. That's all I'm saying. That's the only thing I'm going to say to you then. All right. This man is not in
peace. He also looks good getting off the bus, Ben. Yeah, all right.
He is the enemy.
You're telling me this good. For the first time. In light of this information, I respectfully disagree. I would like to amend my answer. Honestly, it's amazing. I mean, people seem like they did some kind of revisionist thing where they have talked themselves into thinking just in the last few months that Troy was a good movie. It's not. Bad movie. Also, people want to get mad at like the Odyssey, you know, I saw Paulo Costa, I'm sure, just rage baiting me particularly by talking about how it wasn't
successfully.
It wasn't historically accurate. And I'm like, bro, first of all, it's a myth. Second of all, if you're the kind of person.
That's right. I saw you responding to this. Yeah.
You have no problem with there being a giant one-eyed monster who lives on an island and walks around naked tending sheep.
Well, I mean, those are extinct now, but they were roaming the earth at one time.
But you see an Asian dude on Odysseus's crew and you're like, no, I can't possibly suspend the disbelief. I'm just like, get out of here. But Troy, you want to talk about a movie that completely rewrote the source material in a dumb way is in Troy, Patroclus is Achilles' cousin. His cousin?
Hmm. We're losing people here, left, right, and
a deep, passionate love affair. No two men have ever loved each other more than Achilles and Patroclus, and now they're cousins.
Ben, go back to the beginning. Like, what was Nolan's approach, I guess, like, just in time to set up, you know? Pizzi's over there squirming.
I'm glad you asked. I'm glad you asked, Chuck. In many ways, the Odyssey lends itself to the kind of non-linear storytelling that Christopher Nolan has long favored in his career. It's focused on repetition. It's focused on revisiting certain events from slightly different perspectives. All of that is built into the original text, Chuck.
Yeah.
It tees Christopher Nolan up to do exactly what he does so well, and without changing the core ethos of the source material.
Yeah. I would love to talk about the character developments and stuff like this, but I feel like poor Pizzi over here. Poor Pizzi over here.
Back end.
Okay.
All right. Development. We'll hit all of that right there at the end.
I can tell Ben's got more to say, though. So we will come back
to this.
Put a bookmark in that for now.
Yeah. I'm just going to write this down. More Odyssey.
Just pull the string on my back.
How do you spell Odyssey again? Where's that Y? That tricky Y.
Didn't get that right.
All right.
Lads, Canelo Alvarez, he was on the Ariel Wani show this week. And he had some things to say, and maybe it will roil us up a bit because he's made some comments about the UFC, hasn't he, Jordan?
Pre-fight press conference, Max Kellerman was up there talking about how Dana White has changed the UFC and he's going to change boxing and make it like the UFC and whatnot. And you interrupted him and essentially said, like, hey, Max, like, don't disrespect boxing.
No, because he say UFC is more than boxing.
Yeah.
Not because of Dana White or whatever, because I respect Dana White, he knows. Because he starts saying is right now is UFC is much better than boxing, which is not. Which is not, and that's what I say to him. No, don't say, don't lie to the people, because boxing is boxing. And that's why the UFC fighters want to come and fight in a boxing match.
Now, Canelo Alvarez, obviously, you know, he's not saying boxing is way better than UFC. He's just simply saying UFC is not better than boxing. Obviously, we all know here that boxing's been around for a lot longer. But this kind of sparked a bit of a debate with myself, Ariel, and some of the lads from the show about boxing in general. And look, this kind of plays into the conversations we've been having over the last couple of years about the lack of stars in the UFC. Paddy Pimblett now being among the top stars after coming off that win at UFC 329. And then when you just look at the wealth of stars that boxing has, and look, we talked about Fury at the start there. He's not broadcasting a fight because he's now putting in a Netflix series. AJ is fighting on Saturday. Those two guys are meant to be fighting each other. We'll talk a bit about that later on, of course. But just where do you see that now in terms of this debate, Chuck? Boxing v UFC, I know they're two separate things. They don't essentially need to be compared. But the argument that Canelo is fighting against is UFC is way bigger than boxing, which was said by Max Kellerman. He's saying he would not quite see it that way. Where do you have boxing in terms of a product these days compared to UFC?
So are we saying, like, in terms of big stars? Like, is that what we're kind of, like, when he's... is that what the inference is, like, that, or just in general?
I think in general, I was just using the stars thing as an example of, like, you know, when you think about the wealth of stars that they have, it is quite gargantuan compared to UFC right now, I would say. But no, any way you want to take this,
it's so hard to answer it, because we're sitting here talking about, wow, there's a lot going on this weekend, there's nothing going on this weekend. Yet in boxing, like, look at the people that are fighting. You know what I mean? Like, you've got Anthony Joshua, you've got Tyson Fury. They're not fighting each other. This becomes the subplot of this weekend, right? Like, that we hope that we get this fight later in the year. Now we're starting to not feel good about it again. But the fact that they're fighting, you know, in MMA, or at least in the UFC, if a big name is fighting, it feels like a bigger deal than this. But the problem is that it's not an equivalent, because I'm not sure. So who would you put in? Like, who would you put in? Let's say Tom Aspinall, right? Like, as a name on the same caliber. He wouldn't be fighting somebody who's going to be 47 whenever this thing runs. And like the guy Walk that you're talking about, who's 46 right now and will be 47 by the time this fight shows that he's getting his ass kicked. Like, we just don't have the equivalent of that. But if you're talking about, like, a general air of, you know, I guess, like, just which one feels like it carries more gravity? We just came out of two big UFC events with the White House card and the McGregor card. They both felt big. But I still feel like when you get a really, really super big boxing match, it feels transcendently big. Like, because I feel like the people who never peek in to the world of MMA still kind of have a radar for boxing. And I don't know if this is just because it ties back generations. It's been a pop culture thing, you know, for years and years. It's just so much more ingrained in the sports psyche than MMA, like, which has always been trying to catch up to this. I still think, man, to this day, that boxing has that. When you get a really super big boxing event, it feels transcendently big. It really seems to captivate the sports mind. So if you're talking generally, I know where he's coming from on this. I would still say you can't tell me that the UFC beats boxing in that realm.
Ben, how do you feel about it, my love?
Well, it depends what we mean by better, right? Like, especially when you're saying UFC versus boxing, you're saying a brand versus a entire sport.
Yeah.
And that's a hard comparison to make, because I do think the UFC has done something that boxing has tried and failed to do for at various points all the time, where, you know, you remember maybe like when we were kids and you'd see this regular Thursday night fights on ESPN or something, you know, every once in a while somebody to try to get one of these kind of things off the ground where it's just
USA
like,
Today or USA, what was it, USA Network,
yeah, USA whatever. Network, yeah. And they would just try to do these things where it's like boxers you haven't necessarily heard of unless you're a really hardcore boxing fan, but these are guys on the way up. Maybe you'll see them fighting for a title a couple of years from now before they get to be big stars who we can't afford. We're going to show them on this just sort of like running weekly fight show. And that never was a huge hit for boxing. It was always just sort of like, all right, like you were kind of driving home the point for a lot of people that when they flip on the TV and watch it and they go, oh, I don't actually care because I don't know them. And they, you're making people realize how much it is like an individual star-driven, personality-driven sport. And the UFC found a way to essentially recreate that in MMA, but extremely successfully. Because now the UFC knows we can put on anybody. We can put any two assholes in UFC gloves, throw them out there on a UFC event, and they're UFC fighters now. And there's like the people who are MMA fans are conditioned to be like, well, if they're fighting in the UFC, they must be good. They must be somebody. And it's, they got a weekly show. That's essentially what these fight night events are. You know, it's a weekly, like Saturday night, you know, there's probably a UFC on. And especially when it's all available for, again, I will say, a very reasonable monthly subscription.
Here
cost.
He goes again, shilling again, Ben. You're always shilling that Paramount.
It is reasonable. I would say, yeah, that's
your,
a good word.
Your expectations
it.
Don't need to be super high. It doesn't need to justify an $80 price tag to you every time, like a pay-per-view. It's just a thing that's on. You set the subscription and you forgot about it, mainly because you wanted to watch these big numbered events and you're still just excited that those are thrown in for the subscription price. And now, hey, there's these fights on from Abu Dhabi this weekend. You watch if you want to. If you're busy, that's no big deal. You're not like falling behind on any important news on the sport. You'll get caught up. It doesn't. It's not that big a deal. They recreated that model, and it makes them $1 billion a year from Paramount. $1 billion a year just for putting on some fights. That's extremely successful. That's something boxing has not been able to do, to recreate at that level. Boxing, though, when the stars fight, still manages to feel on average bigger than when UFC stars fight. But it's also because the incentives are in different places. And for boxing, it's like we got to sell those fights. Those are the one big ones we have. For the UFC, they're sort of like, we're getting paid whether you guys show up or not, whether you guys watch this or not. And honestly, if these guys get to be too big of stars, it sort of becomes a pain in the ass for us, like Conor McGregor did.
Yeah,
it's better for the UFC to have a bunch of people clocking in, going to work. And there's enough people that when we have a hole in a fight card, we can start calling people up and they need the money. So they'll say yes. Like it just works completely differently now. And so when you're talking about which one is better, right. I'm like, I'm sure the UFC is really happy with their business model.
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially since they keep all the money.
You know, one thing you could look at, and I know it's not, again, like everything is not apples to apples. That's the problem, right? Like, but during that fight with 2024, when it was the Mexican Independence kind of fight week, and they have the Sphere card, right? Like, well, I'm out on Vegas. I'm going to see the Sphere card for the UFC. Now, given that wasn't like a star-studded event, but it still was kind of like this novel event for the UFC that was, it drew a lot of people, but it was dwarfed because of Canelo's fight with Berlanga. You know, and everywhere Canelo, I'd see him, I'd see his entourage moving through, and it was just, it was like, I don't even know what it was like something from a movie. You know what I mean? Like you see something like, you're like, dude, this is a whole different playing field. And I know that like Anderson Silva back in the day had an entourage and all that stuff, but there is something about just the festivity when a Canelo fight. So like, it just kind of swallows up everything around it, including the UFC's event, which I found, you know, it's like, it just goes into this. Like if you have a Canelo fight, how does it hold up against this? Or how does it, you know, and from his mind, you can totally see why he's like, well, I don't think it's bigger than the things I'm doing personally. You know, you could see his perspective on this.
Is there like an age gap? GC was going to mention this, like, you know, all of the boxing fans he knows that know the sport inside out seem to be from 35 plus, as opposed to like UFC being so popular with younger people. I think a lot of that did come from the COVID times that we always talk about, sport opening back up, people just having an appetite for it. And it also, like, through the, I think they moved ahead of boxing in terms of courting influencers, things like this early on, like the Nelk Boys podcast, things like this that kind of speak to that demographic. Do you think there is an age gap situation between the sports, Chuck?
I do. And I think that that's actually you know, the young people, like I know that my son is 15 years old, got a lot of 15-year-old friends. So they all follow the UFC on some level. They all follow, they all keep tabs on it. And I think it's just accessible. Like you mentioned, there are different kinds of platforms that they get it from. The UFC has always embraced very well, by the way, like social media, like from the very beginning. Do you remember when Twitter first started? I felt like they were one of the first companies that got it. And they were like, they understood like how to use it and draw excitement and build followings and all that stuff. It continues
to
this day.
Fight Week, man.
Yeah, I know. It was, and like giving away the tickets early on, all that stuff. It was just all of that. And I still feel like they kind of know what they're doing there ahead of boxing. Like Blen mentioned, I mean, it's a brand. It's not a full league. If you just said MMA, that's different. Like, would young people know everything going on with the PFL? Probably not. But see, they're kind of like the broader, you know, outside world, and that's boxing in general, right? I think the point of entry and like accessibility for the UFC has always been way easier than boxing, at least in these kids' lives. You know, like when you've got multiple belts and you've got these weight classes and there's so much going on. Like you see two guys, like I don't think young men's when they because we've been talking about you know, Fury and Joshua for a long time. Like I don't think young men's, well, why don't they just fight then? You know, at some point you're like, why don't these guys just fight? They, you know,
I'm with
it doesn't
them on
process.
That. I am with
right.
them on that.
So I think that it speaks, like the UFC's brand speaks to a younger audience.
Yeah, I think that there's something to that. I also, though, think that, you know, Jake Paul probably helped boxing out a ton in bridging that age gap by coming along and doing some of those fights and bringing that attention to it.
Yeah.
But
still, how many of them would have known
who
Anthony Joshua is?
MMA stories, though, right? Yeah.
A lot of them were like MMA crossover stories and stuff. But still, I do think, though, that boxing is easier for people to understand. And if you just say it, the connotations that people get with it are very different than the connotations people get with MMA, because it's like they'll think, hey, first of all, there's centuries of tradition and history with this sport. It conjures these names like Muhammad Ali, like that even people who don't know sports still know him. And they think of boxing as being a serious sport, even if they don't really follow it or have a ton of interest in it. They're just like, okay, that is a legit thing. UFC still, to a lot of people, the connotations are a dude with a tribal armband tattoo drinking a Monster energy drink and yelling, kick him in the balls in the back of a like county fair hall somewhere. Like
he
that
used to
is
wear
still
a Condo Depot, you know, on shorts.
Yeah. Or, I mean, increasingly they think, oh, that's that Joe Rogan right-wing, Donald Trump stuff, right? Like
I know plenty of those people. That's kind of how that's their association to it. Yes.
You're looking at one, baby. And so you've got like
you play the role.
Who bring those different connotations to it. And boxing, just because of its history and how long it's been around, I think people take it, I don't want to say more seriously, but they don't need to have it explained to them. It's also a simpler sport to understand. Even if you show up to boxing knowing nothing about the rules, you watch one round of boxing, you're like, I think I get the idea here. We're trying to punch each other in the face real hard until the other guy falls down. I get it. You know, and with MMA, you got to be like, okay, you can do this, but not here. You can, you know, and
don't tell the boxing media snobs who, you know, see the intricacies of the game, Ben, like they see all the inside stuff.
There are tons of intricacies to it. And that's why whenever we used to have these arguments where like the boxing guys would make fun of MMA fighters striking and be like, look at this guy. They told me this guy is supposed to be good. Look at how he throws a jab. And you're like, well, yeah, man, if you if you created a sport where you could only use one finger of one hand and we were trying to tap each other only between like the second and fifth rib or something, the guys who did that would get really, really good at doing that thing. It doesn't mean that they wouldn't get their asses handed to them if they had to go out in the parking lot and fight somebody and anything goes, you know, like it's a different kind of a thing. And so I think that sometimes like the UFC is selling its stuff to like a smaller core audience over and over again. And boxing can come along when it has a big fight and rope in a much broader set of the population. But then on the flip side, they can't turn around and just like, here's our weekly boxing show.
Right.
Guys, like a guy you never heard of 2 weeks ago, but the brand gives him power. Boxing doesn't have that. And the UFC does have that.
Yeah, it's true. Speaking of one of these gargantuan fights 10 years ago that we're still talking about kind of happen, it's AJ v. Fury. Fury just won today. That's new information. That's in the last hour, guys. Round 7. Walk got put down. Who could have thought it? And now AJ fights tomorrow night, of course. But, you know, there's a lot of conversation. I believe we have some Calci prediction markets on whether this will actually happen. It is going down once again. 58% chance. There's still optimism over on the market there that this could happen. But let me tell you, lads, I saw Tyson Fury speaking yesterday after one of those weigh-ins that he does, and it didn't really fill me with confidence. I believe we have that as well, Jordan, don't we?
I believe Anthony Joshua has said, you come into my ring, etc., etc.
I'm going home. I've got about as much interest in Anthony Joshua versus some Pringles as I have of spewing that all over the floor. None. I'm going home. Not interested in AJ and his mate boxing.
Would that face-off not just be a wonderful face-off, though? If this fight is going to happen, if you go over there and you face-off, would that not send out a signal to this world that it's happening?
You can send out as many signals as you want. You've been told for 10 years it's happening. It hasn't happened, has it? So, don't hold your breath.
Don't hold your breath. Is what we want to hear after, you know, us kind of reluctantly agreeing to, you guys go ahead and fight these dudes. You've never heard of Pranga v. Joshua tomorrow night. The dude that Fury fought earlier there in Thailand. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, and Turki Alsheikh has come out and he's had his comments, I believe, in the 4-second clip.
Joshua fight, Fury fight. It is this week. And after that, we have big announcement.
Oh, so he's got the announcement. Eddie Hearn, of course, promoter for Anthony Joshua. He's a bit disappointed with Fury's comments.
Look at history, right? What fight has AJ ever signed for that he's not competed in? What fight has AJ ever pulled out of? I mean, he's got the most solid resume, solid stand-up professionalism of any fighter I've ever worked with. You know, if there's odds being thrown around about who might pull out of this fight, trust me, it ain't Anthony Joshua. So, again, you know, we have our doubts whether he'll turn up, especially if AJ looks great on Saturday night. But, you know, like I said, don't forget, AJ's not only fought every contender that he could have, he also previously signed to fight Tyson Fury, who pulled out of the fight because of an arbitration with Deontay Wilder. He signed to fight Deontay Wilder to be announced in the ring, but he lost to Joseph Parker. So don't worry about AJ. He's as game as they come.
Well, you know, a few weeks ago, New York Rick was on the Ariel Ryan show and he's like, do you know what? Who fucking cares at this stage? Just don't fight then. And now I'm kind of there. I just realized in the last day, I'm like, I actually don't give a shit anymore. I don't think I do. If we're going to fuck, this is the last time I can have my pants pulled down on this one. Several other things. Jesus. You can pull my pants down on all day long. But this one, I've been pantsed every year for 10 years.
Unnecessary.
Yeah.
I got my tallywhacker out, flailing in the breeze once again.
What?
And
the breeze, just kind of flapping like an old flag.
It's an island nation, Chuck. The breeze will come right in off the ocean.
What I'm trying to say is, I'm really pissed off, Ben, that once again we're here at the point where we're like, oh, these guys are about to fight each other. And then suddenly Tyson Fury is just like, don't hold your breath, guys. Come on.
First of all, I'm going to say I just real quick did a search for Tyson Fury's name on Twitter under the videos tab, and you can see it. This thing of like we're fighting and you're not going to be able to see it until you watch my reality show 3 months from now or whatever. Nope, it's there. You can see it.
How's it look?
Do that these days. We don't live in that world where you can just
you're hung up on this.
It's obscene. This is 2026 and we're doing like... one of the top boxers in the world, he's fighting this weekend and he's intentionally not going to show it to you. That's the whole business model, is showing people the fights. And so to do it, like, you can't, this is dumb to me. It doesn't work, but I am with you at this point on every big, like, teased fight that goes on for too long gets us to this point where there's just a fatigue that sets in and we go, look, fight or don't fight. Let us know. Let us know where you come down. You know, once you have a decision made one way or another, I'll be open to hearing about it once you have arrived at something. But for right now, I'm done asking you about it. I'm done being willing to listen to you guys talk about it. It's whatever.
Blue balls special, Ben. That's what this is. Just to use Pete's vernacular. This is just like one of those things. They were arguing, like, it feels like, I'm guessing it was less than a month ago, that people were very upset that this fight might be held in the United States versus
I was one of those dickheads. Yeah. How dare you?
But see, this is what they keep doing. So we keep going into these different thoughts of like this fight. And this is what happens. Boxing has done this. We've seen this. And so MMA has done this too. The UFC has done this too at certain points where you tease something long enough, right? Like, or people talk about it long enough that you do reach this point of indifference. And that's just, and generally speaking, it's because the relevancy of the fight wanes. I mean, it's like already 10 years past, it's, you know, past when it would have been the biggest, right? Let's say five, you know, it's past where it would have been at its highest point. And so what are we clinging to? It's really just an original promise. You know, these guys signed on in like, what, 2020 to actually fight before Fury pulled out on that. It's crazy. And I mean, you're going back to 2010 when like they sparred and all that stuff. And that's when the original accounts of, you know, Fury's account about like, you know, hurting him or whatever. And dude, that's a long time to be thinking about a fight. I mean, at some point you got to let it go, right? It's unhealthy to be attached to this thing at some point.
Yeah. Like, you know, part of me feels like it's the classic Fury, like, oh, I wouldn't show up for this face off. And then tomorrow when Riyadh, there he is beside the ring.
That'd be pretty
Joshua
good. As far as trolling goes, yeah.
I mean, Eddie Hearn's trying to sell us on Pranga. 20 knockouts, 20 fights. Yeah, okay, he's never fought anyone on a world level. But he can punch. He can clearly punch, you know? And you're like, oh.
He beat Joe Jones, I think.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
The big one?
I thought it was John Jones at first. Sorry, guys. Move on.
I mean, Tyson Fury is the same guy who showed up at the White House event, did the whole walkout.
Just oh, my God.
I ain't saying nothing. I ain't telling you guys nothing.
That's still
about
the strangest like, thing.
And so, yeah, would it surprise you if he ended up doing like going and doing it anyway? Yeah, sure. You could absolutely see him doing something like that.
I still feel bad for Anik in that position. I mean, he's just throwing the wolves out there.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. And it was like, did nobody tell him? Did nobody give John Anik a heads up? Like, hey, so we're going to do this interview. He's not going to say shit during this interview. Like, he's out there just trying to pull it out of the guy. He's just like, nope, not going to do it.
And still nothing.
I'd be so bad. Like, I don't know how Anik does that shit. Like, I would be so bad in that situation. I'd be having some type of nervous breakdown to my Jordan. What the fuck am I meant to say to this fucking giant?
Go to break.
Yeah, I mean, how are you not at some point just sitting there just being like, okay, so last question here. What are we doing?
Why are you standing here with me?
What are you doing here?
Oh, well, that's... Look, it's not all doom and gloom because Abu Dhabi... It's got another one. Ankalaev v. Guskov, Ersek v. Tamarov.
Reasonable monthly price. Just keep that in mind. Go ahead, PT.
Yeah, that's everything we're saying. Oh, and it is, of course, the debut of Magomed Zynikov, a.k.a. Wilchenko, a.k.a. John Bork. The lads covered this extensively yesterday on their show. This is some kind of card, Chuck. What?
No? That's your throw to me. Yeah, I mean,
it is.
These are some fights that are happening. Aren't
yes,
they, Chuck?
Yeah. And it's funny because you know, I was like, I'd like to talk to somebody, and I talked to Magomed. You know, like I did most of the talking. Like
look at that.
But reluctantly. You know what's funny is he was like 30 minutes late to the you know, assigned time. You know how this happens.
Yeah,
and
every time.
And they come on there and they're like, it's Sergey, you know, the guy who translates, and he's like, we got a lot of these, so let's try to keep it to 10 minutes or less. And I'm like, but you have to, translate. I'm like, you know, but I tried to do, you know, with what I had. You deal with what you had. And I took a different angle on it, basically, and just saying, like, you know, I pointed out how painstaking it is to get things out of him, essentially, and how his expression is just the same no matter what. Like, although I will say, you know, like, more so than Guskov, like he, you know, you mentioned the name Alex Pereira, and it's like that's, you can see that there's something there. Like I said, that some turbulence came into it. So, like, that's basically what it was. So, when we were talking about him, I felt like he actually would pause, let the translation, and then he'd have something to add to that, which to me was like a kind of a triumph to get like a couple of extra lines out of him there.
I once was having this conversation with another media member, and we were ranking the tiers of good to bad interviews, and for me, at the very bottom of the tier, the very bottom tier is phone interview in a brief window that has to go through an interpreter. Like something about like,
I know, dude.
You can do an okay interview through an interpreter in person, kind of, you know? Like I still an experience I'll never forget is interviewing Fedor through an interpreter in person, and then like through the entire time when his interpreter would be speaking and telling me the English stuff, Fedor is just like looking into my eyes with
I've done this.
Like icy blue eyes or something of like a wild forest creature. Just, and I'm looking at him and I'm like, there's nothing behind there, man.
Yeah.
Like,
he's
looking right through. And but you can do an okay interview with that, but when you're on the phone and having to go through the interpreter and then it gets all routed back and you're just like, this sucks, man. It sucks
for
everybody. It, like all three of us in this situation, none of us are having a good time.
You know,
there's
man,
no way it could be a good story.
And the worst part is like, should I mention the name? I guess we can, because he's a popular fighter, like Mauricio Hoofy. Like, I'm talking to him, and you get the translation. Like, you ask him a very specific question, you know, and, you know, there's this long whatever it is, and then it comes back to you, and it's basically like, you know, whoever God wants to put in front of me, that's who I'll fight. I'm happy to finally be in the, you know, and you're like, oh, no, because you can't even, well, how are you going to use that? You know, how are you going to use that type of interview? Yeah. It just, that's tough.
I mean, I think I've told this story before about interviewing Shinya Aoki when he came to the U.S. to fight in Strikeforce, and they seemed like it was up to him to bring his own interpreter, and he seemed to just bring the one of his friends who spoke the best English, and was not in any way a professional interpreter, you could tell. And, but it was like, the friend was this kind of like skinny, nerdy guy.
Yeah.
And like so sort Aoki. Of like shy
that was
but, like no but Aoki, when you interview him, you can feel like an arrogance coming off, like an earned arrogance. And like he would stand there and like I would ask my question, the interpreter asked it, and Shinya Aoki would stand there with his arms crossed and his chin up in the air and give his answer as if like he is like, I will deign to answer your question fine, you know. Like he, and then he'd stand there with his
he
chin
was
up
cool
listening.
Though man.
Like, he was super cool about it. And it's like, but then when it would come out of the other guy's mouth, I'm just like, this doesn't feel like what he's acting. This doesn't feel like the spirit of what he's saying.
Yeah.
Because
you want to capture the presence.
Yeah.
Although, but like Sakuraba, back when I talked to him at Metamoris one time, like it was been between smoking a cigarette. So that was like, you have all the context you need when you got an interview. Like, didn't even matter what he was going to say, you know?
Yeah, I mean, especially like trying to capture the feel of Sakuraba, thinking about your question, taking a deep drag.
It was like that.
All right, listen, man, you know, like that's awesome.
Life hasn't been easy, you know?
I will say, like, I mean, we say we're having trouble kind of getting behind this card, you know, really, really like, you know, sinking our teeth into it. Ankalaev had no such issues. You know, Chuck asked him about his opponent, Guskov. Here's what he had to say. I mean, what can I say about him? Ankalaev says, yeah, he's on a good winning streak so far. I'm not underestimating him in any way. I'm prepared for him. I know this is going to be a fun fight. This is going to be an exciting fight. I think the fans should be excited about it. I don't know what else I can tell you about him. I honestly don't know too much about him.
Yeah.
I mean,
read the next part, though. See, this is how the piece had to be written. What does it say next? Do you have that there?
Are we going to the next quote?
No, just the next. What did I say?
See, the thing is that it's not a full quote the UFC can attach to a promo material. These are the thoughts of a man who knows he needs to keep swimming with the promise of land ahead.
I'm basically pointing out, like, you know, you're not going to get a full quote out of him. You know, you're not going to be able to use some kind of promo material off of what he's saying there. You know what I mean? Like, there's just certain fighters like this.
Okay, the crazy thing to me is, first of all, I was flashing back to when they were first trying to make a big Ankh a thing, trying to get us to call
big
him Ankh. Big Ankh.
What do you mean make it a thing? It is a thing. It's big Ankh.
That's your boy, big Ankh.
It's a thing kind of like in a ironic way at this point, because we all went, what? Okay. And then we were like, okay, it is kind of fun, but we're also like not really taking, you know, we're not exactly saying it the way we used to say Crow Cop, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, after he lost to Alex Pereira, it was like, when's the last time until now, until this week, have you thought about him once?
That was kind
since
of the
he lost that
of the
fight
piece.
To,
That's
to
the
Alex
subtext
Pereira.
Of the piece.
Like, he just fell off the map. And he's like, he's still one of the top guys in the division. There's not like a ton else going on in the division after Alex Pereira left. And still, it just seemed like everybody moved on completely out of sight, out of mind. And I mean, maybe like, I was talking about this week when somebody asked me about Tommy McMillan, you know, straight out of Great Falls, Montana.
Oh, yeah.
Woo!
You can tell.
A whole bunch.
You can tell.
Over there at the Expo Park for the Fusion Fight League, granddaddy of them all. And the thing is, like, people are like, what do you think about this guy? And you're like, well, he's already succeeded in getting us to think something about him and getting us to think about him in between fights.
Right.
You know, especially once I hear one thing, like Ariel being like, what's that bass behind you? And that bass turns out to be a bong. I love that.
Here we go.
Love absolutely everything about that. But also, once I hear that the UFC is concerned about your partying, and that they come up and ask you if you're going to be okay with
how's
this
your
bonus
headspace,
money.
Kid?
Now I'm interested.
Yeah.
I'm on the train.
What's with all the dudes looking like that from Montana, man? Is that all these ruffians? They all kind of have a shared look up there. Looks like.
Yeah.
Great Falls has a surprisingly...
What's that vase behind you, Ben? What is that vase?
Great Falls is a mullet, by the way. I think is what. Isn't that a mullet type?
Great Falls is a mullet kind of town, honestly.
Okay.
It's so that fits. They've got a weird contingent. Like, Joe Riggs moved to Great Falls.
That makes sense.
Well, he does have a Joe Riggs look about him, kind of like Sid Vicious, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But also beats the shit out of him.
Something feral, you know?
When Joe Riggs moved to Great Falls, it wasn't like the people of Great Falls were looking at him being like, what's this guy doing here? He seems
they're
out
like,
of place.
They're like, welcome, brother.
Fits right in. That's where he should have been all along.
That is a beautiful tattoo, sir. The diesel? I love it.
Yeah, that is the kind of thing that Great Falls is doing over there. And so I'm glad to see him coming out and just really representing. But I also, like, think about the kind of post-fight celebrations the UFC executives must have seen or heard about secondhand. They're probably used to some stuff. And if they get concerned.
Yes.
Then that's different. That's not like the pastor hearing about you and getting concerned. That's the people being like, uh-oh.
Like, Ant Evans did that piece on the UFC 38 out in London. Did you guys see that?
Oh, yeah.
Where
yeah,
you know, it's like, you're like, dude, can you imagine these days them, like, getting a bus of fighters after the event or whatever it is and, like, saying, like, okay, guys, we got an open bar. Let's go at it until it closes. You know, that's just, that's an insane setup, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, you know what I loved about that story the most is, Ant has told me that story in person a few times.
Yeah.
And he captured exactly how he tells the story in person in the piece. You know what I mean? Like, and you're kind of
yeah, I
I'm
can hear his
him
voice.
Saying it. Yes. Yeah.
I love it. You can feel the disdain with which he says later that Chuck Liddell remembered all this happening at an English pub.
And yeah.
Like, and like, he's like, he had gone to great lengths to describe this nightclub and its vibe and everything. And then to hear
it's called China White. It's not
pub,
an English
pub.
Yeah. And, then hear, and to hear Chuck Liddell afterwards just be like, we were in England and we were at a bar. So therefore, English pub.
That's Chuck for you. That's Chuck for you.
That's all he knew.
I tell you what, lads, we mentioned at the top Tajin, obviously, Shamil Musayev. This was kind of like a hardcore delight kind of thing because Musayev has been such an animal campaigner. Tajin is the guy getting propped up by PFL. You're kind of thinking, this could go all kinds of wrong here for Tad, or he could go emerge on the other side of it, victorious, and, you know, it's a coronation moment for a new poster boy. But PFL are in a struggle right now, man. Like, I was watching last weekend. I was watching along there on YouTube. I think that's where everything's coming off. And, like, you know, the numbers weren't crazy, I'll be honest with you. And you're looking at this now, another blow. And it's also like this kind of situation where Ariel was talking about it during the week about like the ESPN are giving them these slots where it's like the same day as a UFC. And it's just like, how could you, like, oh, you understand the fan base being like, oh no, I'm all checked out for MMA if I'm watching this UFC card this weekend. It just feels like. And I like John Martin. I think he's looking, you know, I like Dan Hardy. I think they have great intentions with this. But I just feel like situations like this, when the UFC is on the same day, you're putting on a card much later, and now your main event is falling off. It's absolutely devastating, isn't it?
Dude, he's only had, I had to look up Ernesto. I couldn't zero it in on the top five. But he's only really been in the PFL for one fight before this. That's a hell of a bump up, isn't it? From tough enough to straight into this stuff? That's a pretty crazy, like, if you look at it just from his lens, this is a great opportunity. But man, you're right. It's just, it feels like so many times when, you know, they've got like something intriguing coming up, there's a speed bump and all of a sudden we're doing some like digressive, you know, like some detour or whatever, and you just don't get to the bottom of anything. And I mean, they had a pretty good card in Austin. Was it last week? Yeah, that was the one we were talking about. But some of the guys that you think that they kind of needed to win there, didn't look great, you know. And then you get like Dakota, who's coming into Long Island, and you're like, well, why aren't they put? I mean, it just feels like there's always a little bit of a misstep, right? Or like some misfortune attached to most of these events.
Yeah, it's like they have that Dakota and Usman and Magomedov event, like that has to be a hit for them. But like, it feels like they're going in with little or no momentum. You know, it really does. To be honest,
it's tough, man. Like Long Island for Dakota. I mean, I know that you want to like have a big moment, like a big showcase, but like, it's been too long. She's like one of the breakout stars. You got to put her in England, don't you? I don't know. Sometimes what's going on over there. Yeah,
I agree with you on that. Ben, did this even cross the radar this week? The old PFL Thad Jean would have been Masaiev, now Ernesto Rodriguez.
To me, everything about the PFL these days feels like we're playing out the string.
Yeah,
that's just kind of the vibe, you know. I say that with, I take no pleasure in that.
Yeah.
The things we've heard them say about their relationship with ESPN and all that kind of stuff just seems like people are sort of moving on mentally, at least.
Yeah, that is very fair. Like, I feel like everybody's willing to give this a try. John Martin comes in. I think everybody's on board. It's just that the events keep on disappearing for us, like behind other events. And then it's like, there's so much stuff on even this weekend. You're like, where would that be on the wish list of things to watch this weekend? I'd say maybe it's up there for ultra, ultra, ultra hardcore MMA fans, but not a lot there. Like, can MVP save them? Remember MVP we're talking about, like, oh, we could use this, and John Martin was saying we'd be interested in some kind of relationship where they could use some of our fighters. Like, if those guys start showing up on those MVP events, say it's akin to the Rousey v. Carano thing, and they have some of these guys on the undercard, could that help them? You know, that people would come back and check these guys out on their own cards, or do you think we're looking at a lost cause at this stage?
Traditionally, it's hard, right? Like, with the times we've seen, I mean, the PFL and Bellator, for instance, like the times you see kind of like mergers where it's not the UFC kind of absorbing something, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like it's kind of the last flare in the sky that's like, hey, you know, see if this helps us. But generally speaking, it doesn't. PFL does have a couple of people that are very intriguing, right? Like, they've got some fighters over there, but it's just so, like, if anything, they should be, this is a cautionary tale for people who are like, oh, I could run a promotion. Like, you look at all the different things they've tried to do, what will stick, what will work, and you see it batted back at them. And then all, so like, it's catastrophic when things like this happen, because now an event that was going to draw eyes loses that, you know, and it's just, it makes you very like, I would never want to start a promo. I would never want to try to do this, especially when you have an established, you know, entity like the UFC. It just seems like it's bad news most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and if you're MVP also, like, if we are at the stage that Ben like predicts that we are, forecast that we are, which I don't think is far from the truth at all, why would you just start doing business? You could just wait. You could simply just wait, and then they all become free agents, and you're like, oh, we'll can handpick the ones that we want now.
It's sort of like the situation when Odysseus and his crew are faced with a choice between.
I'm happy you're saying this. Yes.
You know, the whirlpool and the monster on the rocks, you know, Scylla and Charybdis, and it's you can choose between certain doom, and you can choose between, you know, just get six of your guys picked off, and the choice is clear, but that doesn't mean that it's easy.
Right.
That is a great point. Ben, you wrote a fantastic piece this week about the mob. A situation, right? This is what you have to stop doing. Stop making every character so interesting that I start a sidebar of Googling all of these things that they've done, because it makes me go, oh, shit, yeah, sorry, I was reading that article. I went back. I kept on Googling all of these gangsters, especially that yappy one that got his head blown off shortly thereafter. He's very interesting. I went down a half an hour kind of rabbit hole, and I was like, oh, shit, I was reading an article. It's fantastic. Please set the table for this wonderful weekend piece for people to check out this weekend.
Well, yeah, you're referencing Willie Moretti, the mobster who was called in to testify. And for a hint to how different news services used to work, when we were putting this together and our great editor, Shaheen Al-Shadi, was looking for photos to use, and he was like, wow, they definitely took and posted a lot of photos of his murder scene. You can go see it if you want. Like, they were not like, well, we should, for the sake of decorum, we shouldn't spread these. But nope, here's photographs of him in a restaurant with bullet holes in his head. And it's just right out there for everybody to see. But yeah, this I kept coming across these stories as I was doing other boxing history stories on Sonny Liston, on Jake LaMotta, all these guys who were called in to testify at various points in front of one or the other version of the Kefauver committees, as they came to be known. And it was essentially like Estes Kefauver, this senator from Tennessee, he, in trying to get some publicity for himself, but also because he genuinely cared about some of this stuff, a big part of his platform was business regulation, antitrust, things of that nature. He did a lot of, he did some good stuff in terms of just like regulating how pharmaceutical companies can work, like things that benefited those of us decades later. But one of the things that he did that brought him the most attention was these televised hearings where to investigate organized crime's influence on interstate commerce in America. And it was the kind of thing where Americans had heard about the mob, they'd heard about the mafia, but mafia movies, mob movies hadn't really taken off as a thing. And it's kind of in the late 40s and post-World War II years where there started to be newspaper and magazine stories publicizing more stuff about the mob. And so people were intrigued, they're interested. And then he holds these televised hearings to bring these guys before the U.S. Senate committee and make them testify. And it came right as TV ownership began to be popular in America. And this is one of the craziest parts to me that I learned, was that at the end of World War II, it's like a few thousand TV sets owned in like private households in America. It's just like rare, just scattered TV ownership. And then by the beginning of the 1950s, you know, by like 1952, there's 12 million. Like just a huge explosion in just people who owned TVs. Before that, it was everybody owned a radio. Very few people owned TVs. And then suddenly within like a 7-year span, everybody pretty much has a TV or knows somebody has a TV. And so he would do these hearings in the middle of the day. And it was a chance for people to see, like, what does a real life mobster look like? What does he act like? What does he talk like? And so all these people, it was like a phenomenon where people were like, you know, they're supposed to be working and they're going off and watching the TV. And it was all these stories about housewives leaving dishes in the sink to watch these hearings.
How dare them? Yeah, I know.
Can you imagine? Oh, can you imagine?
Fuck.
They're not ironing or whatever it was they're supposed to be doing in the 1950s. They're watching these mob hearings, and they were, and like, I listened to a lot of these like old like radio broadcasts and stuff, and old like broadcasts that show you, like you can find them on YouTube. And some of them would show up and they're just trying anything they can think of to not have to answer these questions. One of the guys, here's the tip though, I think people have learned. If you're going to claim a medical reason, if you're going to bring a doctor's note essentially and be like, here's why I can't testify, you got to pick something that's just right, something that they can't really confirm and something that really will get you off the hook. Because one of these guys came in there and he tried to say he had laryngitis. And
it's a good one.
And you could hear him as they're continuing to pester him with questions, trying to make his voice sound hoarser, you know, like trying to play it up and everything. And he's like, I got a doctor's note that says I'll damage my vocal cords if you force me to keep talking. And they're like, we can hear you fine. You got a microphone in front of you. Like, what do you say? We just keep trying. And he's just like, damn, you know, it didn't work. But like they did come to learn. They did a few of these rounds of hearings and everything. And one of the things that they actually managed to make some headway in, or at least like identify, okay, here's an industry that the mob is controlling to an insane degree at the time, was boxing. You know, the old IBC and the influence that the mob had on boxing careers. And they had enough guys at the time, like Jake LaMotta, who he was already at the end of his career, had retired, had done a short prison stint, and came out and was just like, yeah, these guys basically got me to throw this fight. And it's the way it worked at the time. You had to agree to play ball with the mob if you wanted a title shot. It didn't matter how many fights I won. It was the only way I was going to get there. And it was like really fascinating for Americans to get to see this and see like, oh shit, like the mob is a real thing. And when you see that scene in The Godfather 2, where he's being pulled in front of a Senate committee to testify, it's just ripped straight from those Kefauver hearings.
I like the idea of just filming the hands, you know, like that. That to me should come back. We should bring that back, you know.
He really thought he was helping himself by being like, I do not give them permission to show my face on thing. And so they just pointed the camera at his hands, but his hands are just doing nervous
fidgeting
stuff the entire time. And people are going like, okay, this dude's definitely guilty, you know.
I've never seen hands this active in my life, not even the boxing ring. Do you know what? As you're talking there, I'm actually kind of annoyed because I went looking for these videos as I'm reading this because it was a further rabbit hole and I couldn't find shit. It's probably bad Googling on my part. So you're going to have to send me some of these videos.
Yeah.
Particularly Handsman.
The other one that was really entertaining for people was Bugsy Siegel's former girlfriend because she showed up very glamorous, like dressed in furs and everything. But was also like I think they thought she was going to be a kind of a different witness than she was. And they were just basically being like, so you hung out with these mobsters. They gave you a bunch of money and everything, right? Like they're a bunch of criminals. And she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. They're all nice gentlemen. They gave me gifts because they're very generous. And they're like, what kind of gifts do they give you? Well, they gave me a house in Florida. Yeah. They are generous.
It's very generous.
Fair play to the lads. Maybe we have them all wrong. Any parallels, Ben, between modern day boxing and this boxing world that you explored in this piece?
Well, I mean, it did seem interesting to me where you look at something like the IBC, where they were ruled to be operating as an illegal monopoly and were dissolved, like ordered to be dissolved by a federal court in 1957. And you can't hear, court says it's a monopoly and not think about some of the stuff the UFC has been accused of in court and has settled to try to make go away. So, like, there are some definitely like some comparisons. It just feels like, as with so many things in our economy, we went, okay, that was the mobster way to do it. But what if we could figure out a similar way of doing it that was entirely legal? What if we could figure out how to have a cartel, but it was legal and above board because the guys are all, you know, executives in suits? And it seems like in some ways, that's kind of how we got here. I mean, you think about like right now, if you're a UFC fighter, say you got one fight left on your contract and you are in a position where it would make sense for you to challenge for the title, you know they're not going to give it to you. You know that you're going to have to do something in order to get that title shot. I mean, the difference here is they're not ever going to ask you to throw a fight. They're not, the results and the sport itself, the integrity of it is not impacted by this, but they are going to not give you a title fight unless you sign a new contract with them. And we all just accept that that's the way the sport works.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. It's obviously what I want to know, Ben, right, is with the Odyssey, am I going to have to do any pre-reading here if I go in, you know?
No, it's made for even you illiterate sons of bitches who did not read the Odyssey in a comparative lit course at San Diego State University in 2001.
It sounds long.
It's an Odyssey. Long. You know what I mean? I've tried. I did War and Peace. I can't read Ulysses. I can't. I've tried so many
times. Even an Irishman can't read
don't
that.
Don't bother. What? Don't bother. It's that one. You don't need to.
I try and I fail, I hate myself. I'm just like, what the fuck, stupid
brain. It's a dedicated pursuit, you know?
Yeah.
Have you done it? You've definitely read it.
I've read it.
Read Ulysses, yeah.
It's not worth the time and energy it would take you. I'll tell you what. I'll send you one of these graphic novel copies that my daughter read. She really enjoyed it. A lot of pictures, a lot of colorful pictures to look at.
Colorful is important.
And you could get, I will say, it is, it's interesting how we come to a story like the Odyssey and you realize like, this is why it would have made for a great oral history kind of thing. It was essentially a song, a poem that a guy would come to your house. You'd have a big feast in exchange for letting him stay there and eat and everything. Wow. He'd sing you this song. He'd tell you this story. And it sounds is like exactly the kind of, like one of the reasons it's so long is because this guy needs to figure out a way to stretch it out more so that if we don't finish it tonight, don't worry, tomorrow night, if you let me eat at tomorrow night, it's really a story where it's just like two bookends, you know, a thing happens at the beginning, a thing at the end. In between are a bunch of adventures, just constantly stopping at an island to be like, what's on? And this is one of the hilarious things about the movie. What's on this island? Let's go check it out, boys. And then 5 minutes later, back to the ship. Oh God. Like we're running away from some monster. It's that over and over and over again. And you could see if you were a person that needed to string it out, you can just keep adding islands. You can just, it's Greece, man. There's a ton of islands out there. You can just keep adding like side adventures.
I love
until these people are absolutely sick of you. And then you're like, okay, let's wrap this up.
You like an adventure story, Pete. This sounds right up your alley.
I do like an adventure story, but I can get lost in the sauce very easy. 3 hours, that's a lot of sauce to get lost in. Like,
you
I
won't
could
even
just,
notice it. You won't
A bit
even
of lint
it.
Could pop up and I'll just be like that. And I'll say, oh, did you see that? And I'll be like, oh, was that the Cyclops? It's gone. I was looking at the, you know, happens.
I'm telling you, you're going to be riveted. You're going to enjoy the hell out of it.
How much vase should I use before I go?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. If you have any of the vase that comes in the like gradual acting edible form,
we don't have that kind of science over here. You know what I mean? We just go in about to puke on ourselves and hope it works itself out. You know what I mean?
I was in your fair country and somebody gave me some of that science wrapped up in a napkin at a bar. And I was just like, well, all right, I guess I'm just going to take your word for
it.
It is illegal, and I would never.
No, they warned me. They warned me about it. And it doesn't work the same where I'm just like, how many milligrams is this? And they're like, brother, I couldn't tell you. Good luck.
Yeah.
probably some. I'd imagine some. You can go. Or surely Blaze wants to go and see this. Come on, Joe.
Yeah. No, I don't know if he would want to go, but I want to go, so we'll see.
3 hours.
Three hours.
Jordan, how has
That's a commitment.
Ben, has Ben whetted your appetite, Jordan, for this? Jordan's not speaking. He's not talking. Oh.
There it is.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's an endorsement.
The IMAX, that's the way to see it if you
IMAX,
have that technology.
We don't have one of those around here.
Yeah.
Second view, he's still buzzing. Like that's a ringing endorsement too. My God.
So you had two people talking about it.
That's what I was doing too, so you didn't miss anything.
Well, look, I mean, he thinks all the excitement is gone this weekend and he still has big ank tomorrow in Abu Dhabi. Huh?
Mm.
Unbelievable. Look, Oscar Losev has booked it too.
Yeah, Oscar's going.
Yeah.
Ben, you're selling tickets, bro.
Oscar Losev
is doing okay at the box office anyway. Yeah. I don't know.
We saw someone say it was terrible. Only $324 million or something. They were like, this is a bust. This is a bust. I can't believe it. But I might go. All right. I've got to meet Andy. Andy was in Dublin. Her family were meeting them on Sunday, bringing the lovely Elaine and everything. So that's going to be a fantastic day out. A lot of fights, as we said, all the way through the weekend. You've probably missed Tyson Fury. Well, you've definitely missed Tyson Fury if you're listening to this.
And you'll never see it. You'll never watch it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, never see it. Ben did say there's some clips up there. Maybe you want to have a look at that. You've got Berlanga on Sunday at the MSG Theater. You've got, obviously, Big Ang in Abu Dhabi. You have the PFL card, of course. Thad Jean against Ernesto Rodriguez, which we're all very excited for. Errol Spence is fighting in Australia. Jeez. Lots of fights, I will say again.
That's intriguing.
Yes, that's probably the most intriguing box of fight of the weekend. Before we go, do we have any Super Chats, Jordan?
Yeah, there it is.
I got it. PT, Ben, Chuck, have a great summer. Thank you, Sammy. That's lovely.
It's awfully nice.
I will have a great summer. Thank you.
Get these guys some air conditioning for Christ's sake, Jesus.
Oh yeah,
have a great summer on some like sign in the yearbook shit. I love it.
Yeah, that's what I like, Sam. That filled me with glee. Is that all? Oh, hang on. Hey now, 69. I was never a soccer fan. Fair enough. The World Cup has turned me on. Watching, I became a fan of Bellingham, Haaland, Quinones. How do I pick a team to support?
Ooh, well, okay. You want to be careful. That's what I've learned. You want to think about this decision.
Ariel thought about it a lot before he went to Forest, and I thought that was a very educated decision. I'm a Manchester United fan. We've had a few hard years, but we had amazing triumphs through my childhood in the 90s. Please, Ben, as a man who's come to the sport later and you somehow ended up with the Galacticos of modern-day football, Paris Saint-Germain, please tell us. How do you come to that conclusion?
Well,
please say.
I've gone through a few different versions of this because I, for a while, was doing a thing where whenever I would go, especially to like a European country on like vacation or something, I'd always want to see a soccer match there, you know, and just like take in the local culture. Yes. And it's a lot of fun to do it. And yet every single team I went to see was awful when I went to see them. And like, I went to see Hertha Berlin when they lost to the worst team in the league in a match that would mean that they were relegated. And it was like it was almost a scary experience because you're around these people and you're just seeing the anger on their faces, and you can just feel this, like, I'm so sick of these guys, like this feeling. And you're like, uh-oh, this could turn ugly here in a minute. And then I went to an English Premier League match where I saw Southampton suffer the worst home loss in like 106 years. And that was very memorable.
I think Manchester City?
I think it was Leicester City.
Leicester City, okay.
Oh, shit, yeah, Leicester. Yeah,
they, I think they lost like 7-0. Guy had a guy sent off early on. And I remember at halftime, it was like pouring rain and everything. I went down at halftime to drink a beer, and there was a guy standing there also like drinking a beer, and he's kind of looking at the exit, and he went, I've never left a match early in my life, but I don't know if I can go back in there.
Oh,
and I didn't say anything because I didn't, I was like, as soon as I speak, I'll out myself as an American, because he right now thinks I'm just a fellow Southampton fan. And I don't want to ruin this mystique. I wanted to just like be a witness for him in this moment. And then he finished his beer and he walked out there into the rain and left.
Holy shit, dude.
I saw an important moment in this guy's life. So it's like,
oh my God,
you got to be careful. You don't want to pick a total loser, but you also just don't want to jump on the bandwagon of whoever is like popular. Like, you got to have
definitely
some
don't
kind want to
do that part. Bandwagon thing sucks. Can't
I'm trying
that.
To sell Chuck on Manchester United. Yeah, I was like, you know, we're in a good spot right now to start supporting Manchester United because we're not so good. We have a big city rival.
You notice
City
he takes a share in the pronoun. He's like, we. I like what guys
are.
Yeah,
now it'll be they when they bollocks it all up later this year.
Listen, I became staunch again at their lowest point, 17th in the league. I was like, this is when they need me. I'm coming out hard here, and. It's an experience. It's very dramatic football team. And they're going to have the Amazon series this time around, I believe, this season, which is only going to be crazy. It's the other teams call us Banter FC because it's not a football club anymore. It's more like a reality TV show. But, Chuck, I'm telling you, it's a good time to get in. I'm just saying.
Okay. I'll be tuned in. Bennett, I think Ben does it right because somehow he got the Kraken. As like, that's an expansion team, right? Like, so, like, you got the Kraken and... You've supported them, and you're pretty loyal. I will say that you're a loyal fan.
We've had our ups and downs with the Kraken, but we're still here. We're still representing.
Yeah,
I think this is our year. Going to hoist that.
What's
Stanley
the name
Cup.
Of the football team? The Grizz. Who do the you Grizz. Like more? This is a question.
You can't. You can't even compare it.
Yeah, you can. You can. You can easily compare.
The University of Montana Grizzlies is an institution. It's a religion. Religion around here. Oh, you know, there's nothing else all like that. And we're going into this season. It's a big year of change. We've got a new head coach. The university has a new president. We're all unsure what to expect. You can even look forward, if you're a local to Missoula, Montana, you can even look forward to a long feature article about the current state of the University of Montana athletics coming out in The Pulp, written by yours truly. I spent months reporting this thing, and it has a lot of interesting stuff about the way college football and college sports works now, where you essentially have to have a guy negotiating with players' agents trying to like buy a cornerback. It's wild. It's wild times here, but there's no feeling in the world that compares to standing there in the parking lot on a glorious fall Saturday in the shadow of Mount Sentinel, drinking an ice cold, or let's be honest, lukewarm Miller Lite. Can of Miller Lite in one hand, little plastic bottle of Fireball in the other, getting ready to walk into the stadium and cheer the Montana Grizzlies on to a victory over Northern Colorado or some shit.
Eastern Sacramento State or wherever.
Can you pick between the Nuggets and the Broncos?
What?
Can you pick between the Nuggets and the Broncos? Who means more to you?
No, I can't pick. It's a two different thing. Two different agonies right there. And joys. That's very different.
Well, you know, that's all we got for you this weekend, guys. So many fights for you to watch. So many intriguing contests. We've covered them all here today. Or you could go and see the Odyssey, which every member of the crew seems to be doing right now. Excuse me. Sure, Sean McDonough here. Great Irish name. Sure, The Odyssey is great, but when are we getting a film adaptation of James Joyce's Ulysses?
Can you imagine?
Never.
Please, please.
Guys, just wandering around thinking things.
Got to put
12
it
12 hours
long. What's his name? Lars Venture or something like that. Like he's got
somebody. Who, I mean, or that or Andy Warhol. Like when Andy Warhol died, your hope of that went out the window.
Yeah.
I could deal with a film version because I just want to hang when someone goes, "Did you ever read Ulysses?" I want to be like, "Yeah."
That's everybody,
and I've just
though.
Seen the film.
This is like the ongoing joke. Everybody's like, "Oh yeah, have you read Ulysses?" But if anybody's read, they're like, "I don't know what I was reading." You know, it's hard to,
it's,
you know,
yeah, it's all like describing a door frame for like 30 pages and shit. Like I can't get behind that bullshit. Fair play, James Joyce, Irish legend. The Dubliners, great short story series, a lot easier to read. That's my tip for the week. Any other super chats there, Jordan? That's it. Well, as I was saying before I realized it was under super chat, lots of fights, lots of excitement. We'll be back on Monday to talk about it on the Ariel Wani Show, and then we'll be back on Friday for the crack before we take our annual leave. So for 2 weeks after next week's show, I don't know what the fuck you're going to do on Fridays. I hope you find something to do. I'm not going to point you in any direction here. Maybe go and watch The Odyssey at 70 millimeter whatever.
Yeah.
Go and watch that. Everybody seems to love it. IMAX, guys. Yes. Lots of love. Mwah.